The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
Well, I watched an intriguing documentary film called Jihad Jane yesterday, and the writer and director of the film, Kieran Cassidy, joins us this morning. Good morning, Kieran. Nice to see you again.
Thanks very much for having me.
Who was Jihad Jane? Simple start, and we'll get stuck into it then.
Jihad Jane was a woman called Colleen Rose, and maybe why Irish people are wondering about a woman called Jihad Jane was that she was arrested in Waterford, or it was surrounding activities in Waterford in 2009. So Colleen Rose was a 47-year-old woman at the time, an American, blonde hair, coming from Texas, who had been previously living in Pennsylvania. And she had basically gone online, started creating this alter ego called Jihad Jane, and she started communicating with people in Baltimore, in Colorado, and mainly Waterford, a guy who was there calling himself Black Flag. And this kind of plot culminated or surrounded the idea of killing a Swedish cartoonist. But anyway, they were arrested in Waterford, and the name Jihad Jane kind of created global headlines. It was the lead story on NBC, it was the lead story on CNN, and Colleen and the story then became quite a major talking point.
I mean, you've mentioned Sweden, Waterford, and Texas. Mm-hmm. This is the sort of shrinking globe,
yeah,
courtesy of the internet.
100%.
And the beautiful alliterative baddie of a name of Jihad Jane, adding to the colour of the story.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to say nobody gets killed in the making of this story. I think that could, because otherwise we may sound flippant.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think like the thing you pointed out there straight away was, like, when I started down, we started looking at the story about 2011, 2012. And the first thing that struck me when I started looking at this case, so to the audience to get an idea, the cast of characters involved is so disparate. So you got a very introverted mother of one in Colorado. You got a teenager with Asperger's in Baltimore. Then you've got a guy who's unemployed down in Waterford. And then you've got Colleen, who is the kind of the lead kind of figure in this, this blonde woman who's basically moved from, who had this brutal background, which we can go into later,
yes,
but was living in Pennsylvania and was spending 8-9 hours on the internet the whole time. And this story wouldn't have happened in the 70s or the 60s.
Without the internet.
It was all the internet.
And all roads will lead us back there. But for the purpose of the film that you've made, and also the story broadly speaking, let's join the dots. And I'm going to ask you something, which is, if when you're telling a story, just keep with the code names.
Okay, yeah. Rather,
because it might be a little confusing. So we'll just go with who's who, and we'll concentrate on the geography. So connect those dots, geographical and otherwise, together first, Kieran, and then we'll talk about the implications and the psychodrama beneath it afterwards.
Yeah, well, I think that one of the people that was communicating it was clearly Jihad Jane, and this was somebody who was posting comments and videos frequently on YouTube and a number of other channels, but she was calling for Jihad and she was communicating with other people and organising. The other person was kind of ringleader, would have been a person called Black Flag. That really is the Irish connection, and Black Flag would have been based out of Waterford, and this person was kind of very upfront about their experience. That they previously had been involved in Jihad, but also said that they had a training camp and they had brothers and come over here to Waterford. Come here, you know, you'll get married, we'll have, you know, we'll be able to kind of take it on to the next.
And train you for Jihad
and all of this. Yeah. So like he kind of presented himself online as this kind of experienced internet kind of jihadi. And then you had Eagle Eye, who even to this day is very mysterious and is, nobody really knows who this person is, but the hunch from some people is that it's either a troll who infiltrated the group and was kind of egging them on, or it could have been an FBI agent or somebody like that.
Because, a honey trap of sorts.
Yeah, exactly. Like the easiest way to keep an eye on this group is just to post. And then when you're wondering whether they're going to do something, just suggest, why don't you, you know, and see how it goes. But nobody really knew about Eagle Eye. So that was another person in the mix now. And then finally, because I know people are just getting going through this kind of vast cast character, in Baltimore, there was a teenager called Mohammed Hassan Khaled. He really didn't have a nickname, but he had Asperger's and he was just online all the time. He had moved over from Pakistan and he'd kind of fallen into this very weird internet group that were kind of communicating with each other all the time. And then finally, we have in Colorado, there was a woman who had logged on and she wasn't proactive. but she started communicating and she kind of attracted attention because she was another American woman who was communicating with the group as well.
Let's focus on Black Flag living in Waterford, working in Waterford, eventually entices the two American women over to Waterford. Is that right? So Jihad Jane finds a way here and the other lady you mentioned finds a way here.
Yeah.
He marries the other lady.
Jamie,
And has a baby with her.
Yeah.
And Jihad Jane, meanwhile, when she lands here, what happens?
Yeah, well, like, she arrives. She had made like a very sudden emergency decision to come to Ireland. And she'd come to kind of be reunited with Black Flag. And when she arrived, she told us she arrived into the apartment and Jamie was there, the other American woman.
Yes.
And she talked online with the American woman, but she didn't realise she was coming over as well. So all of a sudden, there's two American women in this guy who's calling himself Black Flag's apartment in Waterford.
And how old is Black Flag, or what's his background, or what did he...
Ali Sharaf Dimash was Algerian who'd spent a long time living in France. I think he'd numbered children in France and then moved to Ireland. And I think he'd worked in Cork. All during those stages, he wasn't radicalised. Okay. This wasn't... he didn't arrive over here and this, like, he was going about his normal life and this was low beneath the surface. He was married to an Irish woman and she says it just started happening over time and then she broke up with him and then he kind of started living in Waterford and then he started going online and then he started communicating with these women.
Okay, so he gets them over to the flat and now they suddenly have a sort of like a weird Mexican standoff with two Americans and this other head looking at each other going, what's next?
Well, I think the thing about it is that to put it in terms to the audience, they had a lot of plans online. They talked a lot. They had seen each other's avatars, but they'd never met each other.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, reality came crashing in when they were all sitting in this one bedroom apartment in the centre of Waterford. And I think like one of the first things Dimash was looking for was like the ATM card of Jamie because he didn't have any money. So like the reality of the camp, the reality of what he was kind of proposing. Now it's mad that they were coming over and this is maybe what they were expecting.
Yes.
But then the reality kind of hit them as well. Now, the point about it is that tension then existed between the two women in the apartment as it played out over the next month and so. The relationship then would have deteriorated. Like, I think Jamie didn't really like Colleen. I think Colleen's felt that Ali Sharaf Dimash prioritised marriage over the idea that they were going to go ahead with their plans.
So sticking with the guy in Waterford who'd promised training camp and there was talk that they would be assassinating the cartoonist in Sweden who put the prophet's head on a body of an animal.
On a
dog's head. And they said, we want you to go and kill him. So where was the training camp in the Daesh? Like what came of all of this?
Yeah, like I think like The thing about it was, I think from Colleen's perspective, she saw none of it. She experienced, like, it never really got off the ground. Like, Lars Vilks didn't come up and mention anymore. And
the cartoonist,
And she started, like, kind of losing interest. I think with Dimash, there's a danger of, like, I think his plan was kind of absurd and it was kind of farcical and he went around the wrong way. There was a darkness going on there concerning how he dealt. Jamie, Paul and Ramirez had arrived over with her child. And when you're talking about training, he was taking the child off and he wasn't bringing Jamie with him. And there was just a strangeness in how he interacted with the two women, especially Jamie.
Was he a spoofer?
I think the thing about it is that like you can never say what was fully going on. Like let's say law enforcement were listening, they said he'd just have to get it right once. But the thing about it was what he did do and his plan was like bring a Colleen over. Colleen was putting everyone on the internet. Colleen was being tracked. Jihad Jane. She would attract attention ever she went. She was very loud. She contacted the FBI from Waterford. One of the things that she told us before, we're kind of talking, it isn't in the film, but when she was deciding, okay, this is not working out. This guy is not what he promised to be and I want to go home. She went up to the Garda station in Waterford and she looked for the FBI department And then there was no FBI department. So the guy got confused, asked, you know, what she was looking for. And then she just headed off. So it was just very surreal and very bizarre and very strange about what was going on in the apartment down at Waterford over that period of time.
Okay. And she decided ultimately that this thing is a complete mess. I'm off.
Yeah.
And she said, I'm going to be caught, essentially. So she calls the FBI and puts her hands up and says, get me home. I'll tell you everything. And I can go. I presume she thought she could walk free then if she told them everything. She hadn't done anything per se.
Exactly. Like, that's the thing with Colleen. I think she saw this as kind of an adventure.
Okay.
This is fun. This is exciting. And her lawyer always contends that she just thought she would just tell the truth about what had happened and then she would be kind of shown out the door.
How long did she spend in prison?
She spent 8 years in prison. So we were there, I think, the very day she was getting out of prison. We were waiting at the gates for her. And the prison authorities saw us out of the gates. So they threw her into a van. And they dropped her on a border in Georgia. So
where you met her?
Yeah, we met her on the side of the road. And then we brought her back to her probation officer in Pennsylvania.
Lord. Okay. Well, look, let's look at the bigger picture in some ways, which is you've described a raggle-taggle bunch of misfits who spend too much time on the internet.
Yeah.
Did you find the story was really about that sense of loneliness online?
Yeah. Like, I think the thing about it is that, like, I think part of the story is when you look at it, you're kind of saying raggle-taggle. Like, I think Colleen had this incredibly bleak, incredibly tough background and a very, very damaged person who had found herself through sexual abuse, you know, from her father when she was 8 years of age. Then she was a child prostitute from 13. I think one of her first customers when she was a child prostitute, she married. And then she just went into like heavy drink and drugs during that period of time. And I think like the other people involved had kind of very similar tough backgrounds. And they all drifted. Yeah, it's a very online story. And I think one of the things that really struck me about the story going through it was nobody here went near a mosque. Nobody, you know, like there was no radical preacher.
Yeah.
This was all on YouTube. And what it was is just at this period of time, now they've cleaned up concerning like say jihadi videos, but you can still get a lot of white nationalist videos online. Mm. But they were very readily available, and then people could go in and just communicate with each other on the message board. So you could put a comment up on it, and then somebody would go in and reply to yours. So yeah, there was very damaged, very lost, very lonely people communicating with each other from different parts of the world.
And like so many people on the internet, they excuse me, they think that they have they get puffed up in their sense of importance, even though they're kind of it's a sad life they're leading, really, and they're fantasists.
Yeah, well, I think like with Colleen, when I was chatting with her in prison, like we'd ring her and we'd chat with her and we'd record those conversations, and that's in the film. And I remember asking her, she told me, I told her, like, why did you do it? Like, what got you so excited about it? Why were you so enthused? And she said, oh, I felt so important.
There you go.
Yeah, and then I said, oh, like, when else in your life have you felt important? And she paused, and she paused, and she just couldn't think of any other time that she had felt important.
Yeah.
So she was on this online community, and people were cheering her on, people were applauding her. And I do then think the other thing about it was, which was interesting from our, my perspective, was that the media then kind of like played a role in it. Like, because like if she'd gone to the FBI offices and she had walked out the back door with a kind of a warning, like, this is kind of crazy behavior, you have to watch this, it probably would have been seen as a failure in her eyes. But what happened was, this became the biggest story in America.
Yeah.
She became like she was a like celebrity in her prison. Prison warders were banging on the thing.
Well, did she get a kick out of that?
Oh, she loved it. Like that was the thing. Like when she had gone through such a, like, I was chatting to her defense attorney when she was in prison, and he said, like, she has had such a tough life. The prison is fine for her. There's absolutely, she's not seeing this as a negative. And because she got like, and it's kind of like looking at terrorism is a media operation. Like, people do things, terrible things, to get attention and to get, like, coverage. And in a strange kind of way in this story, she was delighted that she got all this attention.
You know, I was watching a documentary about Raqqa a few years ago and the ISIS or Daesh or whatever they want to call themselves. Where you got this sense that the people who were, a lot of the people of the jihadis and the recruits were kind of like that. They got online, spent a lot of time online, dispossessed economically, intellectually maybe, and headed off on this anti-adventure.
Yeah.
And I got the sense certainly from your film that all the players, Black Flag in his flat in Waterford, fantasist for all intents and purposes, Jihad Jane, lonely, damaged, troubled, the other one from Colorado with her own troubles, all joining together in this sort of triumvirate of pity and attention seeking.
And I think the thing about it is, that I felt is that like one of the important things you got to remember is, like, back in 2004, 2005, broadband speeds began to increase. So like, it may seem a bit novel now to somebody listening, but like, I remember watching the first time on YouTube a goal being scored and thinking, this is incredible. Where are we now with this edge of technology where I can watch a goal again, you know?
Yeah.
And I think one of the first groups to really realise the potential of this was actually jihadis,
yeah.
And like, you know, extremists in general, like white nationalists and whatnot. And I think around that time, we got some of the videos and we could see the videos that jihadis were sending over that actually Colleen watched, that she radicalised her, and that would have Muhammad Hassan Khalid would have been watching. And you can see the production values increasing.
Yeah.
So like, from when they started off, they're very kind of rinky-dink, poor production. But by the end, some of the stuff that was coming out of the caliphate was very, very high-end. And this was the stuff that they were sending back and that they were selling to younger marginalised or disenfranchised people who were then going over there. And then there was a different reality when they arrived there. But at the very centre of that was platforms that were actually allowing the videos to be up there and these videos to be widely circulated and getting huge... viewership.
Where's Jihadi Jane now? Are you in touch with her still?
She is now trying to just go lead a normal life. She is in a very kind of safe place, living just a very normal rural life. I don't think anybody where she lives and who know who she is and her background.
Okay, it's a fascinating film. It's called Jihad Jane. And Kieran, well done on it, and to you and the production behind it. Really super stuff. And there's a special screening at the IFI tomorrow at 6:15. Is that
tomorrow
right?
Tomorrow at
6:15. Q&A with yourself?
Yeah, Q&A.
And wonderful.
And then I think it's in the IFI Lighthouse and...
Omniplex, Rathmines, Waterford. Should be in Waterford.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of people there will want to get a great kick out of it. And Triskell Arts Centre in Cork and the Palace, as they call it, in Galway. Congratulations on your latest production, Onwards and Upwards.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming to see us this morning, Kieran Cassidy.
Thanks.
All right, at 18 minutes to 10, more after this.